welcome to We're All Going to the Glue Factory and Other.
Yes! I'm leaving that in, but hello and welcome to We're All Going to Die and Other Fun Facts. A semi-regular, occasionally amusing, and rarely funny series of conversations on a random topic. This episode is entitled Bridges of Poetry, and it's about poetry and artistic community in the age of, well, the Orange Menace. For our guests this time are some folks who know something about poetry and artistic community, Mr. Jason Baldinger and Mr. Christopher Collins, both poets and Pittsburgh East End Huguenots, if you will, or figures. thank you both for
you got the
for
East coming. End right there.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
I need another drink.
Yes. Oh dear. Yes. Yeah. I'm already.
I'll
halfway
take Huguenot through. Over poet. I think.
I would be okay with that. Yeah,
right. You would.
How about humanist?
Yeah. Humanist is good too. And what a treat
for yourself.
Well, so we're here specifically, I think, to talk about the Bridge Project.
Right.
So we explain that to the fun folks out there.
The Bridge Series.
The
Bridge Series.
Is, first of all, it's called the Bridge Series, not the Bridge Project.
The Bridge Series.
That's the first thing everybody needs to know.
Yes. It will be a monthly, hopefully monthly, reading series. Currently set at the Brillo Box. It'll be the last Wednesday of the month.
Last Wednesday of the month from February, which is now, until November is
that
when we're
right.
scheduled. So that'll be the season.
Basically, how this came about, I watched the election results at Chris's house.
Worst party I've ever thrown.
Had. Yes.
Just I had to burn my clothes at the end of the night.
His wife was depressed. I was drinking 12-year-old scotch out of the bottle. So it had gotten to that level.
So you were having a good night by the end, at least.
No, it didn't help.
No,
you know?
You still remember the end of the night?
I do remember the end of the night because I went home and I even watched more election results at that point in time.
I would have got a refund on that scotch.
Not to deviate too far off the subject, but you know when the Pirates
are we on
lost
the subject yet?
We haven't really gotten to the subject yet. But
well, we know it's called
the Bridge series.
Right.
So when the Pirates lost their 20th season in a row, I sat home that evening. I'd been at the game that they had that ignominious feat happen, and I went home and I drank 12-year-old scotch and I watched Sid Bream slide.
Oh,
or the Francisco Cordova slide, the Sid Bream hit. Over.
No,
and
it
over.
Was Cordova hit.
It was Sid, Cordova. Yeah, no.
Because Sid Bream was the slowest human.
That
being
was how
in
much
history.
Scotch I had that I couldn't remember. So I just sat there drinking 12-year-old scotch and watching the slide over and over again. So when I find a moment where I cannot be emotionally consoled, 12-year-old scotch is the answer.
Okay, all right.
That is an excellent answer, yes.
Yes.
So the slide and the election, what are your rankings?
They're very similar to me at this point in time. We haven't had 20 years yet, thank God. We've had 3 weeks, which feels like 20 years already.
Yeah.
There is more gray in my beard since November than I can ever want to equate at this point.
Definitely aging.
Yes, definitely aging. So anyway, to bring it back to topic, somehow, the day after the election, we were texting back and forth, and one of the things that I think is very apparent through this last election cycle, whether it be through fake news or other, is there is a shit ton of misinformation out there. And to sift through that misinformation or fake news or anything else has become immensely difficult in some regards.
Yeah.
And some of that misinformation involves national groups at a local level. Planned Parenthood is certainly a prime example of misinformation in full effect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Planned Parenthood money doesn't go to abortion, but yet somehow we're screaming that Planned Parenthood is a subsidizes abortions.
Yeah,
I heard what they did was they took the fetuses and then they fed them to aging widows.
Oh my god.
That's what I heard.
Aging widows are eating right fetuses? Now.
But only, you know, non-Christian aging widows.
Oh. Well, this gives me hope. I might be a widower someday. Maybe I can have an unborn fetus.
Not to start a new rumor about that.
Not to start fake news or any new rumors.
We totally support. Thumbs up.
Thumbs up the Planned Parenthood. Yes.
So Planned Parenthood.
Abortions all around.
Abortions for everyone. So Planned Parenthood and Black Lives Matter certainly see the worst of that, mm-hmm. I believe. But simultaneously, as men of a certain age, we might not also simultaneously be familiar with various organizations and groups throughout the city that are helping immigrants, that are helping persons women. Of color, women, whatnot, on down the line. So I had texted Chris, my thought was maybe it's time to start a reading series. Like, both of us need anything more to do in our lives because we're not busy enough.
Yeah.
Where maybe we invite community organizations in so that they can talk about their past, their present, their future, their goal, their mission, and how to get involved, because at this point in time, in the age of Trump, resistance is volunteerism, it's donations, it's things of that nature. So if we can get these community organizations in to give us a bit of a teach-in, and then throw a handful of writers in to make it entertainment as well, then we might actually have something that can help in this very trying and difficult age. Was that as diplomatic as I can be?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I would say from my end of it, we were, my wife and I were out having drinks right after the election, because what else were we going to do? both very down and a bit shocked by the results of what happened, although some of our friends, John Grahalski, a poet we know, for months and months, it's like, oh no, he's going to win. He's going to win.
Yeah.
This is just what's going to happen. He's going to win. And refused to believe
it. The writing was on the wall.
Yeah, looking back at it, you can kind of, he wasn't, Jay wasn't crazy. He knew what he was talking about. But we were out, and it was nice being out with the groups around us, the couples and friends around us were also in the same sort of state of mind and emotional duress. So it felt, it didn't feel good, but it felt reassuring to know that Pittsburgh was a blue oasis in this election, that having faith in this city to try to do the right thing was earned.
Yeah.
But looking at what we had been doing and what I'd been doing in the literary community as far as doing readings, performing at readings, putting on readings, it just didn't seem enough anymore. Like, why? What is that? Celebrating art for the sake of art didn't feel like it carried enough weight anymore.
Yes.
Yeah.
Certainly. It felt, and this is just for me personally, it felt kind of frivolous.
Yeah.
Like, I'm basically indulging myself in this thing that I love and that, you know, is a passion and that I have, you know, I'm compelled to do with people that I love in this community that also feel that, but is it really enough at this point? And I just didn't think it was. And as Jason was saying, well, what do you do? How do you answer what just happened to the country?
In my case, there's certainly that Joe Hill quote, which is what I came back to over and over again. You don't mourn. Organize.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's simply...
Yeah. You look to what you are experienced in and what you're capable of doing.
Right.
Like, we have this experience. We have this large community of passionate people who are concerned about these things and the new administration.
And that
everything
is also
they
a rarity.
Yeah.
Simultaneously,
exactly.
To have such a close-knit community of writers and artists. Pittsburgh is an anomaly.
Pittsburgh is very unique to have a community that is not antagonistic.
Yes, supportive.
Is really quite unique, but very supportive. So it seemed the thing to do is that if we were going to continue to do readings, and this goes, you know, my outlook for all of it was they have to mean more, they have to be engaged more. And a lot of other people were feeling the same way, as it turned out. The people at the Pittsburgh Poetry Review, have also started doing readings. Yes. Dina November over the Staghorn series in Greenfield is also, she's putting together an anthology and money going to...
Nasty Women and Bad Hombres, yeah, isn't it? Yeah, that anthology, Nasty, I believe. Yeah.
And, you know, all everybody sort of converged on that, that we have to do a bit more. And when Jason and I were talking about what to do, the idea of the Bridge series seemed to be a way of creating a focal point for those things to happen, where the literary community, which prior to the election, largely, you know, was concerned about how to reach a greater audience in the community outside of the literary community. How do you actually reach those people? Because we always seem to be reading to each other to a large extent, which is, you know, it is what it is. But how do you get out of that bubble? This seemed another way to move outside of that bubble, to give people who are wondering what to do, how to engage in the community, who are worried about these things, an option. Like, here, so, you know, having these community organizations out and their representatives on the stage with the writers, giving equal billing to talk about their missions, how they're doing what they're doing, why they're doing what they're doing, seemed an appropriate response.
I think very much so.
To what just happened.
You also have that moment where art becomes resistance, which has become a thing that people are saying everywhere at this point in time. And in the wake of the election, certainly as I went to town hall meetings and various other group meetings, conversations that I joined, whatnot, I found a lot of people, generally younger than me, because, again, at almost 40, one side or the other, for the three of us, we're a bit of an anomaly in our bracket to some extent.
Yeah. I don't know. At the Women's March in D.C., it was not just the youthful march. I mean, it was across the spectrum, which was one of the... There were many things about being there that was, you know, were incredibly encouraging, and that was one of them. It was not just young people doing it.
Right? It's, you know, everybody.
People under 40, but it was everybody. Yeah.
But, I mean, if you certainly look through my Facebook feed or through my high school class, your high school class, your high school class.
I don't want to look at my high school.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
We see a different America coming through in that regard. And at the age that we are, it's much easier to hunker down and go, this isn't happening, or I agree with this bullshit or whatnot, rather than to stand up and say, no, this is not what I was raised with. This is not the country that makes sense to me. I was taught that everybody is free and everybody is equal, and even if we've not done that in practice, it's something that I still believe, necessarily. I don't remember where I was headed with this.
Following up on your interesting point about age,
sure.
I will say that I feel increasingly old because apparently I'm old enough to remember the Cold War, which seems to have gone out of, you know, popular currency.
And see, this has become...
Even though you can watch Red Dawn on, like, USA or whatever, garden basement cable channel that you get, any day of the week, you can see Red Dawn.
I'm sorry, Red Dawn doesn't count as an obscure enough reference. I'm looking for Gotcha with Anthony Edwards.
Well, playing laser tag and paintball with the Russians, I don't know. I think we're beyond that point.
I think we definitely are.
Red Dawn territory now, my friend.
So we go to the war games?
I think it's all about C. Thomas Howe, not Anthony Edwards.
Wolverines, right, baby, Wolverines.
Wolverines, yeah. It's funny to talk about age, because for me it is, you know, I deal with 18-year-olds primarily. Most of my students are 18 or 19. And, I will say in that community there is the same kind of initial shell shock that has grown into almost casual radicalism, you know, which is interesting that it's people are... You know, where I teach, more willing to say things
right
that perhaps might have been unspeakable a few months ago.
Yeah, 4-8 weeks ago.
Yeah, I mean, so...
And I mean, certainly, again, as I floated around in these various scenes, I saw a lot of young people, and I saw a lot of white people, not generally a mixing of races and whatnot.
Yeah.
And a lot of those meetings, whether it be the DSA or whether it be town hall meetings or whatnot, are constantly asking questions about how to get persons of color, persons that are not you, so we're not an echo chamber yeah. involved. This was another very important part of the Bridge series that we discussed as mm-hmm. we sat down, you know, a couple weeks after the election as these things were settling in. Yeah, you go from there if you like.
Let me talk about our discomfort. So when we were talking about the series and kind of developing our ideas about what we wanted to do and who we wanted to have involved, it was very clear right away that being two white men of a certain age, allowing people to have a stage was not what we wanted the series to
yes.
be.
Yeah,
it
very
was
much
not.
So.
We didn't want it to be. It had to be a collective experience.
Yeah.
So what was so important about the Bridge series from the get-go was developing an advisory board of mm. people in the community, not necessarily, and not always people that we'd worked directly with.
No, exactly. We wanted people that we hadn't worked with. Yeah. And Chris's connections and my connections through the literary connection, but especially Chris's, because Chris yeah. certainly is his own hub with Logos Press and with being part of the literary scene through the New Yinzer, among several other things through the course of the last 10 plus years. Longer probably, but I don't want to make it any worse for you if I don't have to.
I'm not that old. I still got some years in me.
You're not ready for the glue factory? No,
well, let's see what happens in the next few weeks with the president. But yeah, it was really important that it wasn't just us determining who was on that stage, but mm. that collectively we facilitated certain things. So we could get the space, we could make sure that we were there mm-hmm. working the door, announcing things, making sure everything ran smoothly,
yeah.
taking that pressure off of the series, the mechanics of it, but that other people could come in and curate the series. And people, nice. Again, people who hadn't worked together. So we have like Joan Bauer from the Hemingway series is on the advisory board. Dina November from Staghorn is on our advisory board. Disha Filia, who was an editor at 1839, which was a very short-lived online magazine that was, I thought, easily the best and most vital writing in Pittsburgh while it lasted. Mm-hmm. It was a short time. It was sort of a experimental thing through, they went through Kelly Strayhorn.
Yes.
I think. But they were doing incredible writings about race in the city that had never really been broached largely before. And other Michael Sims at Vox Populi is on the advisory board.
Megan
Tutelo, who's doing the Build Bridges, Not Walls.
You've seen that in Homestead as you come across
yes,
the bridge.
The billboard.
That is her billboard.
Yeah.
That is her design, and she's been donating a lot of money through that to Planned Parenthood.
Yeah.
Jenny Ashburn,
Ellen McGrath Smith, just having these people involved who are very passionate and very vocal on social media after, so it was very clear that these were people who had, you know,
a stake in what was going on. Not that we don't all have a stake, but the people who are yelling the loudest are obviously the people who feel something about what's happening. The empathy, and I'm certainly, as writers, we have no trouble with empathy generally.
That's our job.
That is our job.
That is like the one job requirement of a writer.
Yeah. Empathy. If you've got that, you're probably in as a poet, as a prose artist.
You don't even have to know how to rhyme.
Yeah.
As long as you can empathize.
Spelling. Yeah.
No.
Just have the feelings. Just have the goddamn feelings.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is, it makes me think about how what you're doing and the act of writing and just caring about things and other people and culture has become, you know, it's not like you guys are politicizing poetry. It's that that sentiment, that emotion, that impulse has become sort of politicized.
Yes.
Yep. In the era of the reality TV president.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, again, as white men of a certain age, it might not be appropriate for us to impose what we think. Yeah. It's obviously not appropriate for us to impose what we think. But I certainly am curious and want to be part of the conversation.
Absolutely.
You know, as a patriot, as a man who appreciates America, or at least the concept of America that I was sold, I want the conversation that actually makes America equal. How do we figure that out? And I know that's probably too far of a leap from where we're sitting at this point in time, but you can't have that conversation if you don't start it.
But it isn't. I think the series, at its core, it's a conversation.
That's exactly what we're hoping for.
You know, it might not, it may answer some questions for some people. If, like we were saying on the way over here, I feel that if people come out to the series and, if nothing else, they're inspired by the people in the community who are doing these things, whether it's the writers who are expressing themselves, you know, eloquently and artistically, or people like Jude Vachon, who's going to be out as a part of, she is Be Well Pittsburgh.
That is our organization, by the way, next week. So
she's one person who saw a need in the community to, not educate, but allow people access and information about healthcare if they're not insured. What they can do, where can they go, what numbers, just having all this information centralized. Mm-hmm. And this is one person doing that. So, you know, it doesn't, change doesn't require, you know, a Heinz Foundation. It's great if you have that.
It is.
And they do great work. I'm not knocking the Heinzes or the Hillmans or anybody like that. But also, if you are just somebody passionate and feels a need and feel that you have the time and the energy to put into it, you can also, you know, provide that for your community, which is, you know, necessary for the community to continue. So you can do good work without a huge bankroll. You can make that happen.
I mean, I know certainly for me, pre-election, there is that consistent feeling that the system is too big to change, to beat. And I think a lot of us bought into that mindset to some extent. And there was a large group awakening in the wake of the election. And now all of a sudden it's like, well, I don't fucking care if the system's too big. I want to find the way to start changing this. And maybe it's, you know, late to some extent or whatnot. But when that moment happens, you have to take that lightning and roll with it. And I can think of no better time.
Yeah.
Especially as we watch the administration hopefully possibly crumbling.
No, it seems to be imploding.
It does.
You know,
but that also creates another set of discussions problems that we can't get into tonight because that's another podcast.
That's another podcast,
Chris and I were talking about it a little bit over dinner, but
yeah,
no. There's a whole other thing, a set of series or a series of questions that come in regarding American democracy, and we know that American democracy has implicitly changed after November 8th, 2016, and how it continues to change, and our adaptation to that change, and how we meet that change to actually try and make this a motherfucking democracy, not an oligarchy, not a corporatocracy, or whatever other word you want to use for it, dictatorship, a fascist dictatorship, anything else. These are the things we want to steer clear of, obviously and clearly at this point in time. Mm-hmm. So put the brakes on and let's do it. Let's change it. Let's figure it out.
Yeah, we definitely crossed the threshold in November that there's just no going back from. There's no returning to that normal. It just doesn't. This is the normal. It doesn't matter who's in charge at this point. This is something that has to continue rolling the way it is. It doesn't. We don't get to go back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, you don't.
No.
There was a great editorial in the New York Times 2 weeks ago, I think it was, about, you know, Brexit and, you know, Trump is the Brexit president, and it mm-hmm. was written from a British perspective, and the ending is stuck with me, and maybe someday I'll try to write a poem called Sleepwalkers about how, you know, in both political contexts, the UK and over here, you know, that there was this highly organized political force,
mm-hmm.
and there was this mass that just kind of sleepwalked into a crisis.
Right.
In the face of that highly organized thing, you know, we just sleepwalked. And I'm thinking about how both of you are expressing this idea about how, you know, poetry is different now. The arts community is different now. And it makes me think about, you know, what I was thinking in October of last mm-hmm. year or whatever, or until about 9 o'clock, I think, on November 8th.
I think all of us around 9 o'clock
yeah.
had the same sort of oh shit moment. Yeah. And much like when I watch baseball and I know we're down by 6 runs or something in the 6th inning, I'm still like, there's a chance, man. There's a chance they could pull this shit out, man. I'm in. We're just like, you know, 2 doubles and a home run away.
You know? And then you see Jeff Locke warming up in the bullpen.
And you just give up all hope at that point in time. But, you know, the eternal optimist, which is part of the cynic in me, you know, they ride hand in hand through my life. You continue to hope that we could not have been, I don't want to say that dumb, because dumb has become, and ostracizing people for not making an educated choice has become its own sort of, help me out here. What am I talking about?
I don't know.
We're accusing people of not thinking, and I think there is some amount of thought involved, whether it's the wrong thought, whether people voted for him for irony's sake, whether people are actually racist or not.
Is this a problem with irony?
I think there is a certain, as I continue to watch what's happening and people still think this shit is funny.
It's not funny.
For the three of us in this room, it's not funny. And for certainly at-risk communities across the board, this is not fucking funny.
Yeah.
But for a large portion of the population, I think there's still a bit of irony, a bit of a joke involved in this. This is taking a piss, to use the British.
Yeah,
term.
That's one of the things I think about is in the future. I've been saying this for years, and now I feel justified that, you know, the future will not look back on the Jon Stewart era kindly.
No.
As part of the sleepwalking of it, you know.
In some ways it facilitated it.
Absolutely.
You could make fun of the people because you were so much smarter than them to be liberal and to be, you know, so active, or not active, but just or, think you were, you know, smarter.
Well-read and have the New York Times app on your phone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you're good. Yeah, fuck that shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fuck that shit. Indeed.
Fuck that shit. That needs to be burned and sent to hell. But
yeah, there is that smarter, holier than thou part that comes still even after the election. You know, we're accusing trailer park trash of voting and whatnot, and that's not how you fix this simultaneously. Yeah. But this is again another discussion.
I also don't think that was the problem.
I mean, I think we all know that part of the problem was Russia, but...
Russia...
We can get into a conspiracy theory on a whole other tangent.
That's the third show off.
We can do the Clinton campaign post-mortem.
We can read some Mayakovsky and Pasternak, and we can talk Russia. I don't think, I mean, just looking at the demographics of how the vote played out,
mm-hmm.
it wasn't a, you know, poor red state people that really did this to the country. I mean, they largely, a good percentage of them did vote Clinton. I mean, mm-hmm. they saw where, you know, their best interest was. It was with her policies.
Right.
It was middle, upper class to rich white people that voted for Trump. And that was the problem.
That was the problem.
What you weren't expecting, that educated people
We're going to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But again, as it's always been in this country, it's easier to play racism with a Southern accent. You know, so you blame the people.
I don't know. Foghorn Leghorn was a smart chicken.
He was a smart chicken. That is true.
I don't know what that has to do with the conversation.
Well, you were going to lead me into a Civil War conversation that I probably shouldn't get started on. As far as cartoon
chickens go, we're going to have that talk. Foghorn Leghorn, right at the top.
He was a smart chicken.
He was a smart chicken. But the other thing I was going to say about that vote is if... I might need this to, like, sort of let me sleep peacefully at night, which I don't anyway, but I try that for a certain segment of the population, burned out industrial towns in the Rust Belt.
Mm-hmm.
If you were voting for Trump, maybe, likely, race wasn't actually the primary factor in that vote.
It was generally not.
This was a guy who was promising industry jobs to come back to your town. Towns that are devastated. There's nothing happening in these towns.
The Johnstown, Pennsylvania's of the world.
Aliquippa. I mean,
Dunkirk, New York, Chillicothe, Ohio.
Towns that are dying.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing is being done about it. Now, granted, in Clinton's campaign, she had ideas to bring those towns into the mainstream. You know, whether it was connecting them through the internet, you know, bringing people in. Mm-hmm. Healthcare, internet, making them a part of the rest of the country was necessary and should happen. But I think if you are in that town, that voting for Trump might have been kind of an act of optimism.
If you saw that McDowell County video that was floating around after the election, I don't know if you saw it. I think it was a Guardian piece.
Yeah.
It was just a cut-together video interview of the people of McDowell County, West Virginia. And McDowell County is one of the poorest counties. Right on that stretch of Route 52 at the bottom of West Virginia, the heart of Appalachia, where the poorest of the poor live. I've driven through this area many, many times. And other than maybe Highway 61 through the Mississippi Delta, or Pine Ridge Reservation, or the Navajo Reservations, and or other reservations of the West, you're not going to see many places poorer than this. You're certainly not going to see places poorer than this with white people in them.
Yeah.
Better or worse, the economic systems of America lead us that way.
Yeah.
So there was a degree of hope to be had in voting for Trump, even though there was no plan. It was just listening to a man shout at you.
Yeah. And I'm not saying you don't own everything that comes with the person that you voted for.
Right, yeah,
I mean,
that's true.
If we voted for Obama, I voted for Obama. I own drone strikes. I own the increase in surveillance. That comes with the vote. You know,
And that's certainly another part of that conversation, that the United States was well on its way to fascism, starting with September 11th and through the Obama administration, that Trump's totalitarianism is only exacerbating a condition that has been part of America. I'm not saying that Obama was the greatest president. He certainly had some positive things, but furthering, surveillance issues and drone strikes eradicate the positives.
Those are a hard bargain. I don't think they eradicate the positives of an Obama. To have a thoughtful person in the White House,
an empathetic
somebody who read and thought and tried to, and you genuinely can say, I think you can genuinely say, whatever you feel about how Obama's policies played out, he was genuinely trying to do the right thing.
Yes,
with the information that he had in the position that he was in. I mean, no president's hands are clean.
No,
that's a job that you don't walk away from with clean hands. You just don't.
Yeah,
think about how they age.
Think about George Bush's Iraqi boy paintings.
Yeah, I mean, that poor man can't put on a poncho anymore. Look what happened to that guy.
But, I mean, after 8 years of Bush, was it 8 years? Jesus, it was.
Yeah, it was.
Seems like a wonderful dream at this point.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? You know, which
resist that nostalgia. I remember having maybe it's because I was in grad school at the time, and reading Radical Theory or whatever, but I just had a slight headache for 8 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think most of us did.
You know, and the frustration and the anger. And, you know, there's another way that I look at it that I want to put out there, too, is, okay, so Donald Trump is the oldest person ever to become president.
That is true.
Yeah,
even older than Reagan, who was already fucking gone. Losing it to Alzheimer's whenever he took it.
And, of course, you know, Hillary Clinton was only a few months younger.
Yes.
And I think the other thing about this era, and, you know, again, make America great again, mm-hmm. is I think we were also at this kind of historical epoch that is happening in mm-hmm. front of us, where there is an older way. I mean, the 20th century is quite literally dying off. Yeah, I don't think it was any coincidence that Bowie and Prince and Princess Leia and all those people also died in 2016.
Right. We're entering a golden age of death to some extent.
Yes, we are entering a golden age of death, and I think it's also maybe a death of ideas, death of perception, death of a kind of older, maybe even idea of America.
Yes, very much so.
And I think it's also important what you guys are doing is, you know, isn't this also the time we think about not just being reactionary and saying, not reactionary in that sense, but reacting to
exactly where we are right now, which is the fucking problem.
Yeah. We're more situationists, actually.
Yeah, situationists, yeah. But thinking about what is next.
Yeah.
Thinking about, because, I mean, this is going to crash and burn.
And see, that was probably the bigger crime, ultimately, not to get too far into this, as we've, you know, stated all these things, of this election was that there were so many things that were not discussed that were meaningful, important parts of the future. You know, healthcare, and the fact that we're still arguing about healthcare is a terrible thing. You have to have insurance on your goddamn car, but you can't have insurance on your goddamn body?
Yeah.
That's fucking ridiculous. You know, the fact that other countries are starting to talk about universal basic income and how much at the end of a capitalist age and capitalism, you know, directly associated with racism and exploiting of workers, where you're going next and whether universal basic income is the way to start fixing that and what universal basic income could do to eliminate government largesse simultaneously. You know, there are so many conversations about the future and about the fact that the future is not white. The future is much more... more nationalities than you can even consider at this point in time. And we're not even having those conversations. There's a handful more conversations in here that I should get off my soapbox and let us talk about, but simultaneously, I get impassioned and then I lost my train of thought.
These things happen. But then, I mean, there is, you know, email servers and stuff like that.
Oh, God, email servers are terrible.
You know, which is another component of this, right? And a component of what you're doing is there is a public pedagogy that needs to happen. Mm-hmm. There is, you know, a different kind, I think, to live in the internet age is... there's a demand for a different kind of information literacy that most people don't have, that I see, you know, my students struggle with, and they get, you know, expensive liberal arts education instruction from me to help them through this.
Yes.
But, you know, you think about, again, those people who voted for Trump who were actively voting against their own interests.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. And very much distracted by, but the email server, you know.
Right.
But you're fed a story instead of fed a real story. I mean, an email server didn't fucking matter, ultimately, in the long run. And that should be proved by the fact that Trump wanted his own personal email server, and nobody said boo at that, you know?
Yeah.
We spent how many months going through debates with her having to answer a question about an email server, and that didn't matter.
Yeah.
It ultimately doesn't matter how you govern your email server. Your email server doesn't dictate how you govern.
How are we handling email with the Bridge Series, Jane?
You send me an email and I answer it.
Is that a secure network?
Well, I don't know how much surveillance are we under.
Our information's in the cloud, right?
I think it's in the cloud.
It's all in the clouds. We're poets. It's where our heads are, right?
I mean, I'm in the ether consistently.
Well, that's because of the hallucinogens.
I contain multiples.
Well,
ideolons and such.
That's our America. We never get past the Whitman's America. We do contain multiples.
Yes. Multiplicities. I also sing the body electric, and, you know, whenever I get a chance.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. You know, the Whitman. Yeah. The is it the first song? Edition of Leaves?
There's Whitman in the forest.
But is it like first edition of Leaves of Grass or that's the deathbed edition?
No, you gotta, it's the first edition. Come on.
Yeah.
Come
well, on. You know,
you gotta go with the youthful. You can't go back.
I know. But isn't that the crisis we're in? Is that the deathbed edition has won?
Yeah. Well,
it's taken over.
Hey, America! We made it 240 years. Congratulations.
It was fun while it lasted.
It was fun while it lasted.
It was a good ride.
It was. Y'all should have listened to FDR a little bit more, but and left his policies in place. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, if he could have just made it a little further, maybe the Cold War would have looked differently, and we wouldn't have lost that war too.
Yeah. So actually, boom. So speaking of the multitudes, and
that is my mic drop. We lost the Civil War. We lost the Cold War. Fuck you. Okay. Deal with it, America. Read about it. Figure it out.
So actually, do we want to? Do we want to?
Okay.
That was my mic drop.
That was your mic drop. Well, maybe for the encore, because can we do? Is we there maybe time. A poetry to?
Oh, do you want us to read poems?
Yeah, why not? Oh, okay. Can we get a taste and then
you can read some poems.
All right. Yeah. Oh, you're making me. You're not even gonna.
I'll read something, but okay. Let you read so I can figure something out.
Okay. Well, we need to talk about something because I my book is a mess right now.
Oh, look at that! That's there's loose leaf papers.
I did not get unfortunately time to do this. I did a reading last night.
Oh, you did a reading last night.
And so I didn't
your
put
papers
my papers
skewed.
Together. And,
look at that. Mike is picking that up real nice.
Yeah. Listen to me, like, quickly shuffle fucking poems.
So how hard is it to be in as the man as you are, JP?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
How about telling our listeners?
I'll tell you what. I'm going to read this poem because I know that it was published in the Post-Gazette after Thanksgiving. Some people thought that this was very prescient to the state of America at that moment. This is a poem called A Rabbit from Hell. I never turn down a mental health day, even if I'm broke and need work. Today I should be a laborer painting ceilings, patching walls. Today Pellegrino has other ideas. He wants me to drive around the Mon Valley. He asks me to take notes while he conjures dead voices reborn from his head. Adrift with late morning sun, near Joseph Yablonsky's Centerville Clinic, where free medical aid was offered to struggling UMWA workers to ease the burden of black lung the UMWA claimed didn't exist. I see a young boy, no more than 11, chubby pink, turning purple. He runs off the front porch, up a gravel driveway, arms pumping, eyes bulging, a rabbit born from the mouth of hell. The look in his eye says he caught a glimpse of the future, and it terrified him. He swore to God that it wouldn't catch him. In a fit of youth, he believed he could escape. The Mon Valley, poverty, this trailer, all the shackles we, as displaced millionaires, believe we can shake. I make a joke. Something like that old devil future can't catch me. Pellegrino laughs. This is America. The future has already caught us.
All right.
Is that my second mic drop in like 5 minutes?
Yes.
Do I need to dig for more?
No, I can. I'll do something.
Okay.
I think. Let me see. I do here.
I'll get a backup for them, just in case I'm needed here.
Yeah, I had something.
Warming in the bullpen, Jason Baldwin. Yeah. The left hander.
Yeah, here you go.
Okay, I'm a righty, but thank you.
Well, I have been a leftist.
I've had all leftists for Southpaws. What is that? Okay. This is called Louisville Lip. I wrote this watching Muhammad Ali's funeral procession. This is the last day any of us will ever throw roses to the Louisville Lip. The last day for noise in the street, shaking confetti from your head, and watching your grandfather shadowbox the angels. God is foolish and makes too many mistakes. Children should not have their limbs blown off in hideous thick streamers. None of us should be afraid to breathe the air seeping down the Ohio. If you were there and witnessed the sweat rolling down his beautiful spine, then today, what good are you? An object in a world of only other objects. I remember rings made of honor. I believe there are words that will stand. I hope my children are worthier than me to call this place home.
Yeah.
You know, I've heard you read that before, but never while you were sitting on my lap.
Well, you know, that really is the VIP treatment.
Yeah, it really is.
And, you know, as poets, we don't make a lot of money, so...
No, we surely don't.
It's really about the intangibles that we provide while we're reading.
I don't know, I think after the collapse in the oligarchy, I wouldn't mind, you know, bringing back the patronage model.
I'm completely into it. At a certain point in time...
I love being patronized.
I'm very happy with patronization at this point in time. I mean, I don't make any money otherwise, so...
Yeah.
You want me to read another poem?
I can read another poem. I'm not the host.
All right. I was waiting for Matt to tell me what I was doing.
Go for it.
This is called The Great American Apple Pie Fight. I found Snow White, Seven Dwarfs, Spider-Man, Laurel and Hardy, and the Blues Brothers, dancing, holding still, outside the Petersburg Chamber of Commerce. All the while, Lee Greenwood sang the chorus of Proud to Be an American on an endless fucking loop. And I was moved. No. Really, I was moved. It was like I had an apple pie fight with God.
Gotta wait for it.
It was a very special moment in my life. I remember driving. I was in Petersburg, West Virginia. I drove down the main street. I passed the Chamber of Commerce, and I saw all these weird fucking statues, plaster of Paris statues outside. I didn't even believe what I saw. So I turned around and I came back and I parked in the glass company or whatever was next door. I got out of the car to take pictures, and I hadn't even heard Lee Greenwood until I actually got out of the car. And I'm standing there just listening to the chorus. Proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And then it cuts, and it does it again, and again,
oh, no.
And again. And it's just that, and it's a bad cut, no less. You know, oh. So it cuts like mid-note. And I'm just standing there staring at this going... I didn't think this part of America still existed. It's that old, weird America that I know I've written about so many times along the way. It's what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
You know, and Walmart culture, the doctor's office architecture culture has destroyed that America ultimately.
Yeah.
For better or for worse. I mean...
Worse.
Yeah.
There was at least regional character and regional flair, and regional character and regional flair have unfortunately been done away with.
Yeah.
Maybe we'd all feel a little differently about this election if that still existed in some regard. Yeah. We still had some either familial or regional, sentiment that we could buy into instead of this weird, poisoned national culture that makes so little sense at this point.
Same taste everywhere.
Same taste everywhere. Homogenized everywhere.
Do we have one more? Before we move on to the bottom five?
Sure, we can do one more. This is called Roots. Hatred is common as Coors Light and the Eagles' greatest hits. Go digging through some stranger's drawers and what have we here? these petty horrors are an easy map straight to your national heart. So forgive the mendacity, but I prefer the deckled edge of America. Well, sure, you can cut yourself, but everyone there still bleeds red, whether they speak your language or not. They still make children the same way, and oh, Daddy, ain't that something? Watching two men kiss on the street, I feel safe for once, and happy. Hallelujah. She loves her who loves her back, and so on, and so on, and so on. Why isn't love as loved as a hall of mirrors, or a carousel, where all the horses, well, they just want to kiss you and tell you how wonderful you are between bites of hay? Why am I sorry every day when I switch on the news in the world I know? When I look at my friends, well, it's nowhere to be seen. Why do I bother? Because you are here and you root me to this place, same as any other green thing, desperate for light and for air.
Nice. Fantastic. So before we go to the bottom five, we should actually do this properly, because I don't think we've said. The Bridge Series, 8 yes. p.m., Brillo Box.
February 22nd,
which is Wednesday. Our organization is Be Well. Do you want to say what Jude and Be Well does?
They provide information for uninsured folks to navigate the healthcare labyrinth. How to get involved with, you know, how to find a dentist, how to find a primary practitioner. So there's a website. Jude publishes these booklets that are free that go out on in your cafes, in your bookshops, everywhere. So people have the information and the contact numbers to do this, to find information about insurance. And so there's a $5 cover for the evening. The proceeds from the evening go straight to Be Well so she can continue her work. As far as who we have on the stage that night,
Tony Norman.
Tony Norman from the Post Gazette. We have Jan Beatty from Prosody and the Mad Women of the Attic. And we have Adriana Ramirez, who is involved with Steel City Slam and also has...
She has a book coming out.
She has a book coming out. I think Simon & Schuster.
Yes, I believe it's a Simon & Schuster book.
It's coming out.
Is it a memoir?
It's something like that. I have that information somewhere. But it's on the website.
It's on the
website.
It's
on the event page.
It's on the
event So page. Adriana, Tony, and Jan will be reading. Jude will be on the stage talking about Be Well, and also available throughout the evening to answer people's questions, sign them up to a mailing list, anything they need to know to be involved. We'll also have some other things going on that night.
I believe Megan Tutelo will be there, hopefully selling t-shirts and whatnot for the Build Bridges, Not Walls. John Shulman's 21 Action or 20
the,
Lessons.
The 20 Lessons, the Timothy Snyder 20 Lessons in a Totalitarian Society, the Broadsides, we'll have those available. We may also have, I think my wife will have some pre-created postcards so people can write to the congressman that night, little messages, and then we'll mail them to
Tuesdays
people.
Tuesdays with Toomey's often, his wife and I, so...
And there will also be an open mic at the end of the night.
Right, that's what I was trying to get to.
So other folks can join in the conversation, lend their voice to what's going on. It's not just the three or four people we put on the stage. It's really everybody that we can get up there to say their piece is what we want to have happen.
Right. Yes.
And future readings, Brillo Box, last Wednesday of the month.
Right. Now through November.
Now will through, be November.
The last, through November.
Last Wednesday of the month.
I know that our March reading is the AMCS.
NAMCS.
Okay. Which is a local immigrant organization. And that is March
29th.
Thank you.
Yeah, March 29th. NAMCS. We'll be there.
We'll be there. That's what we do.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
So keep in touch.
All right. And all of these links, again, will be on the website.
Yes.
And we'll make you go through the spiel again after the bottom five. But right now, it is time for the bottom five.
Okay.
The bottom five is a series of questions not related to our main topic, but actually I kind of did choose some that are, that are of a surrealistic and or philosophical nature. And because we have two guests, and we get like the dynamic psychology between the two of you, you must agree upon your answer.
All right.
And take my last swallow of beer.
Yes.
So it becomes a dire situation.
Yes. All right, question one. Are we ready?
Sure.
All right. If you had to choose, would you welcome the total elimination of day or night?
Oh, day, right?
Day, probably. Yeah, day. Yeah, I'm much more productive at night.
Okay,
yeah.
Fuck day. All right, that was easy. That was easy.
You're two poets.
Yeah, there you go.
I got to howl at the moon, and if the moon's there longer, I got more time to howl.
There you go. All right, question two. Now, that was a yes or no, either or kind of thing.
Okay.
This
is there part, now a philosophical debate about this?
The Kierkegaard now we go open-ended.
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 Open-ended bottom.
Question two.
There you go.
The Christopher Hitchens question.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when he got his cancer diagnosis, he immediately thought of the obituaries that he was looking forward to reading. And he's like, no, I wanted to write those obituaries. So I asked the two of you, Christopher Collins and Jason Baldinger, of the living villains of history, this person must be alive, whose obituary would you most like to write?
Hmm. Is this something that we have to agree upon?
You must agree upon this, yes. You must decide.
Is that Martin Skrillex, the idiot with the...
Martin Skrillex would be a good choice. The Koch brothers would be an interesting choice.
Koch brothers would be good.
Sean Hannity would be a great choice. Yeah. Rupert Murdoch would be a fantastic choice at this point in time.
Yeah, and he's probably close. I mean,
he's closer than anybody else. And
Dick Cheney would be fun, right?
Yeah, but
how many face shootings could we?
I mean, there are so few occasions that I ever thought I would agree with Dick Cheney, but I've even agreed with him recently.
This is so weird.
This country has gone so far that Dick Cheney can't even handle it.
Yeah.
You know, they say pity the man that lives in interesting times, and I agree. I don't like it. I like being bored.
Yeah.
Let's go back to sleepwalking. Well, maybe not, but you know.
Santel and Johnny are so much better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who's the lead singer of Train? Could we write his obituary?
Oh shit, I don't know his name, but I would get down with that one.
Yeah, we could do that. We could probably write it. He's probably dead right now, right? I mean, he doesn't have anything.
Hopefully he's dying.
Let's write it now.
Sorry, too far.
Too far. So we're going lead singer Train then, or?
Let's go with lead singer Train, just because, you know.
Whoever that is.
Yeah, whoever that may be,
you make
yeah.
a pretty good conductor joke, I think.
Yeah.
In his obituary.
It's time. The lead singer of Train just derailed.
Oh!
Eternity.
Oh, my.
Oh.
He had drops of Jupiter in his hair.
Oh.
Oh.
That's the only
it
fucking...
It was a back alley thing.
Huh? Yeah, that was the only train line I knew, by the way.
Yeah,
so,
but you knew it, so...
I knew it.
He was doing something.
I heard it one too many times on some radio station somewhere while I was shopping in some
she
nameless
store. She
was also
wearing jeans when she had drops of Jupiter.
I believe
in her
that's
hair, right?
True.
Denim. The only way to go when you have shit in your hair, I think.
Drops of Jupiter. Yeah. How do you get drops of Jupiter in your hair? I still don't know. I'm a poet. I don't know.
I think you have to be paid for that.
I hope so. I mean, it's probably young, an intergalactic mess. But
certainly, you have to be in like Thailand for that to work.
Or the Roman Empire.
Mm. So it was a Caligula moment.
It was we all have Caligula moments.
Don't we all?
Yeah.
All right. So I've had a last minute change of heart.
Okay.
Where last pinch hitter question for question three. Wasn't going to ask this. Now I'm going to ask it.
All right. We were so entertaining for question two.
Yes. What would your idea of purgatory be like?
I think we're there.
Yeah, exactly. I totally agree with that. This is it.
You know, 2017. We're all desperately looking for redemption to try and find our way to some democratic heaven. Yeah. And I don't believe in God or heaven or any of these other, but theoretical heaven, I'm completely fine with.
So
yes, I am one of those atheists, by the way, if you hadn't noticed.
Yeah, atheist Planned Parenthood supporter.
I am.
There you go.
I am also not a paid protester.
There you go.
No, you didn't get that check?
I did not get a check for protesting yesterday.
I just bought a new car.
Oh, I'm riding in your car.
Yeah. One way to keep the economy going. Yeah. Well, you know, at least if you think about it this way, in Dante's Purgatory... Mm-hmm. You know, in the Divine Comedy, there are no gates of heaven. There's just the gates of purgatory because even though you're still suffering and there's a bunch of shit happening, you've already entered heaven, which is...
That's fair.
Can we be hopeful?
Well, you know,
maybe the implosion, the death...
I seem to read Dante's Purgatory as kind of shitty, but not as boring as heaven, and it's not boring right now, so...
It's not boring.
There you go.
The only thing I can interject here is maybe if we all... add if the Buddhist all life is suffering to our plan of life, to our American doctrine of some sort.
How polytheistic are you going to get?
Oh, we could get so polytheistic. Right. You want to bring Zoroaster in this shit?
I want to talk about cargo cults. Let's talk about cargo cults. That's what I want to get into.
No! I give up!
That's the fifth show that we do is cargo cults.
Alright, so we've spawned all these side shows,
by the
way.
That's great! Well, hopefully you guys will come back.
I got a book coming out soon. We'll talk.
Yeah, you're coming back.
I got a lot of things to say about that book.
There you go.
I got nothing to say about that book, right. Other than it almost killed me.
I see. All right, question, I guess this is number four. Question number four. Okay. All right.
We have five. We only got the three so far.
I thought he was cutting us off. Like, you're
I thought we'd had too much fun, and he was like, I can't do this anymore. Yeah.
All right, question four.
Last time I did this, we went to an hour and 20, so, you know.
Yeah,
we're only an hour and one right now.
Like a dogfish 120?
Yeah, we were a 120 IPA.
Is that an option?
No, but you can have a Storm King when we're done.
Yeah, I can
survive a Storm King.
Or a hurricane.
Well, with global warming, we got plenty of that coming.
It's funny.
Oh, pessimism.
Because it's almost 60 degrees outside tomorrow.
Yes.
Good thing it doesn't exist.
Yes. Question four. If you could unmake any invention, what would it be? If there is some sort of magic time machine thing, if you could just take an invention out of human history, we wouldn't even know its absence.
I'd like to get rid of that.
But it was so entertaining in Blazing Saddles.
No, but I could never do it.
No, neither could he.
It's like the ball in the cup. It's so frustrating.
Can we take the cell phone out?
Do I technically have a cell phone?
You have a clamshell still.
I basically have
this ugly fucker.
Rotary phone in my pocket right now, so...
I think it's not quite
a walkie in my pocket.
Quite a walkie in your pocket, but I mean, this creates so much anxiety in my life.
Right now, I'd like to get rid of the computer and the internet because it's hurting me.
Okay, I actually was thinking the internet was the first
damage. And it needs to go.
Maybe we could just do away with television.
The band?
No. I mean, that's the best boring record ever made. Marky Moon, come on, dude.
Yeah,
it's the best Grateful Dead record the Grateful Dead ever made.
Well, and right at the time when the Grateful Dead started sucking shit, Shakedown Street. And I know you all disagree with me there.
No, nobody's going to defend Shakedown Street.
Good, we can't do away with Television's Marky Moon or Shakedown Street, so...
Get rid of Television's Adventure, right?
We could get rid of Television's
Adventure. You just want to hang on to Little Johnny Jewel's single, right?
Yeah, but wasn't that previous to...
That was previous, but it shows up...
After.
After.
Wow, this got nerdy. Yeah. But so, this is, that is an invention simultaneously.
We both are record shops.
Well, I quit at a record shop.
Yeah, but, you know...
I worked for 10 years in a record shop. 15 years in a record shop.
I call it a hiatus.
I'm on hiatus?
Yes.
But we said...
And you should get that check, because that could turn into something.
No. Certainly, as a man of a certain age, you have to have your hiatus checked every physical.
When your urologist tells you you're going to experience a slight discomfort, he's really selling it short.
Oh! We haven't answered the question.
Urology.
Urology.
There you go.
We're doing away with urology.
The prostate is the advent. I get rid of that. The prostate.
Great.
Goodbye.
All right. So I have to ask this question. It's question 5. Considering especially, Christopher, your connection to Caliban. All right. Oh. So we're living in, I'll call it a different dystopian future. We're in a dystopian future.
Yes.
But
yes.
An alternative dystopian future, right?
Mad Max, Brazil.
Well, in this one, the only Sophie books Troy's. To survive would be those bound in human skin.
Oh, those books.
Yes. So basically, whatever the new order is, they're pretty much fuck books, except if people are willing to have it bound in their skin. And not when you die of old age, but you kind of walk to the tannery with that tucked under your shoulder. And they're not total barbarians. They just, like, smash your head between a couple cinder blocks or whatever. So the only books to survive would be those bound in human skin. Would you, that's part one of the question, would you be willing to donate your skin?
So we have to agree to several things first.
And two, what book would it be? And the caveat, you can't say the Bible, the Quran, or the complete works of Shakespeare. Somebody's on that.
So, first off, burn the Bible and burn the Quran. Shakespeare, I could handle. Did that make it? Was that too inflammatory?
No.
Okay, good. Because I've had enough of religion at this point.
Burning books is never inflammatory.
We haven't gotten there yet. There's been no Reichstag fires yet. Yeah. There's no Ribbentrop agreements or
Kingston coals all set up. No.
You know, food in there. There are plenty of beautiful ceremonies that come with religion, and I appreciate the beautiful ceremonies. I do not appreciate the closed minds that come with.
Yes, but
let's just put that right there.
Yes, but Jerry Falwell Jr. did the Bible. Somebody did the Quran. Yes. Somebody did the works of Shakespeare. So, would you do it? And if so, what book could you agree on? Would be because if you don't pick this book, there's a very legitimate chance it does not survive for the rest of human history.
Well, you're certainly welcome to my skin after I'm done with it. My dermis is of no use to me.
Yeah.
At a certain point in time. Maybe already.
Seems to be doing something right now.
It is. It keeps
the moisture.
It's a functional breathing part of me at this point.
So it's the joy of flying, right?
The art of ballooning?
Yeah.
To make a Monty Python joke, an obscure Monty Python joke. Fourth season.
Fourth season? Wow.
Man, I don't know.
So the like Dave Allen at Large scripts, the telescripts for episodes of Dave Allen at Large, I think we should save those. The future needs Catholic priest jokes. And only Dave Allen can present those.
Can't do profiles in Courage?
Who's Courage? What, Kennedy?
Yes.
No. Come on. Like, that guy doesn't get enough time.
Please. He does.
He didn't even write that. Jackie wrote that. You know that.
Letter from a Birmingham jail?
Well, yeah. Okay. All right. So, yeah. Sure. Bring it back to, like, serious shit.
I'm sorry. I'm not done with the joke yet.
We were all having a good time. And then you gotta, like, be all erudite.
I didn't mean to be erudite or cosmopolitan.
I can't even answer the question.
I think we got to go with Letter from a Birmingham Jail because I'm an asshole and just whipped it out before we were done with the joke. Letter from a Birmingham Jail.
So many off-color jokes could be made about it.
Well, I mean, we've made a lot of off-color jokes in the last hour and 7 minutes. So
taking Andrew Dice Clay
Well, I did say burn a Bible and a Quran, did I not?
And abortions for all.
And abortions for all, yes.
Hopefully my employer doesn't find out about any of this.
change your name already.
I know.
His name is Tom.
They love it.
Tom Ayus.
All right, so one more time. All right, so the Bridge series...
Right.
Yes.
Today is February 15th, 2017. Which is Wednesday.
So 1 week from today.
Wednesday, February 22nd, 2017.
Mm-hmm.
At the Brillo Box on Liberty
Avenue.
Year
of our discontent.
Yes. Yes. The Bridge Series reading, 8 o'clock, $5. Be well,
Pittsburgh.
You can
give more.
You can give more.
All proceeds are going to the organization. We make no money. The Brillo Box makes no money off the door. They're donating the space. We're donating our time. All money goes to the organization we are featuring.
Yes. Be well, Pittsburgh. And our lineup of readers again, our heavy hitters.
We have Tony Norman. We have Jan Beatty.
Adriana Ramirez.
Thank you. I kept wanting to say Ariana, not Adriana. I don't know where the Adriana D goes. And Jude Vachon is the spokeswoman for Be Well. And she will be there speaking as well.
Answering your questions. And
yes. And this will, again, this is a long-running thing. We have events planned through November at the Brillo Box. We have a possible side event coming up in August.
Possibly. That's in the works.
It's a long way off to talk about.
It might be a satellite event. But,
yes. And again, if you guys want to come back as things progress, as you know, we then deal with the Pence administration and the Ryan administration.
I think as we discussed it tonight, it would probably be the Ryan administration. I believe that Trump, the White House, gets cleaned, Pence gets wiped out, and we deal with Ryan.
Ryan administration sounds a lot like the Heimlich maneuver.
It does.
I got to perform the Ryan administration. Stand back. Stand back.
Stand back. Here comes the Ryan administration.
He seems to have access to health care, and he's in a union. I've got to get in there and perform the Ryan administration. Let me just take care of that for you.
The only other thing I can say at this point in time is art is resistance. And
yes, it is.
Resistance is not futile.
That's very helpful.
Is it?
It's inspiring.
Is it?
I'm going to go out and do something now.
Do you want to go do something?
I'm going to start a reading series.
You want to start a reading series?
Are we going to do
How about next week, babe? What are you doing? You want to get dinner with me?
Let's do it.
All right. And I'll have links to the Facebook event page on the site and links to other stuff and all that. So I think that's about it for this is our 44th episode. This is the Reggie Jackson, or if you will, Hank Aaron,
yes,
episode of We're All Gonna Die.
I'm okay with both of those. Yeah, I don't think we need a Brian Bosworth episode.
Not Brian Bosworth and Colin.
Maybe I'm a little more Hank Aaron than Reggie Jackson.
Aren't we all?
I hope
to be more Hank than Reggie.
I hope
but we're
so.
With the 238. Probably more Reggie than Hank.
Yeah,
we probably. No, I'm aspiring for Hank and still just Reggie.
Yeah. All right.
A Yankee at heart.
Yes.
Matt, thank you.
Yes,
oh, you're welcome.
I appreciate you doing this.
Any time for both of you. This was great. Our next episode, well, it'll eventually happen, and it'll be about something. It's intermittent. There's long, unplanned hiatuses. But I think I got something that works for next week, but, you know, no promises.
Okay, well, we don't want to put you on the line.
Yes. our homepage, where you can find new and old episodes, is gonnadiepodcast.com. We're also on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter at Gonna Die Podcast, and We're All Gonna Die is on Facebook. There's also a Google Plus page, which has not been monitored or taken care of or updated for several years. But
does Google Plus even exist?
Yes, it does.
I know what it is, but I thought everybody gave up.
Is that like a Googleplex? Can we go see movies there?
if only. All right, later, meets.